Welcome to the Levin College of Public Affairs and Education. We're doing a podcast called the Masterclass Series. My name is Roland Anglin, and I serve as Dean of the Levin College of Public Affairs and Education at Cleveland State University. This is the Masterclass Series is a series of conversations or discussions in which experts share their skills and perspectives through focused conversations meant to encourage the success of our students and alumni. Today, I'm thrilled to be joined by David Zeckman, a distinguished alumnus of CSU. David started his 39-year career in healthcare and subsequently held leadership positions from supervisor to CEO in urban and rural Midwest hospitals. He is a life fellow in the American College of Healthcare Executives, and he now serves as a renowned public speaker and consultant, and is an active member for both our healthcare and non-healthcare nonprofit boards. He also teaches management at CSU's Hoosier College of Business. Among the skills that David has honed throughout his career are strategic planning and operations management and partnership development, but he's well known for the type of management that aligns goals, behaviors, and processes to drive a vision of providing kind and compassionate care and leadership. I'm gonna start out by asking David, he's published a recent book on leadership titled Driven by Compassion, 8 Values for Successful Servant Leaders. And it's based on real life and everyday challenges and successes of being a loving and compassionate leader. I'm going to start out, David, by asking you, you are a graduate of MPA program, the College of Public Affairs and Management's Public Affairs, Administration degree. How did you and why did you pursue a Administration degree instead of a health degree?
Good morning, Dean Anglin, and thank you for the kind introduction. And I'm honored to be part of your show. And I had the privilege of meeting you for the first time in October. And it was just so much fun to chat with you at lunch and just to talk about leadership in general. So thanks again for the opportunity to be here today. Well, you know, I graduated with a bachelor's degree from Miami University in Ohio, and I was working, I started my career as a teacher in Cleveland. And but then decided that I wanted to join the healthcare profession. So I started working as an on-the-job trainee in respiratory therapy at Old St. Luke's Hospital on the east side near the Cleveland Clinic. And as I worked through that, I figured that I still, from my teaching and coaching days, I loved leadership and I loved interacting with people and I loved helping and mentoring the others and felt like I needed to move forward in my career into leadership and with an ultimate goal, believe it or not, of being a hospital CEO. In order for me to get there though, I needed to return to graduate school. And I returned to graduate school in September at Cleveland State in September of 86, which I know seems like forever ago. Was thrilled to be get into the, as a master in public administration program with an emphasis with a track in healthcare administration. And at that time I was working for Metro Health Medical Center and I was deciding, should I, you know, I like public service. As you know, Metro is the big teaching hospital in Northern Ohio. And I enjoyed that and felt like I wanted to learn more about people rather than MBA type of work, which is still very important. So I thought the MPA was going to be a better fit for me. I will tell you that my experience at Cleveland State was outstanding. I thought it's one of those things, Dean, where I thought I knew it all. And I thought I knew it all about healthcare and leadership and public service until I got to graduate school. And graduate school really opened my eyes to a number of things that I didn't know, both about healthcare and service. And it also taught me perseverance too, because I was working full-time at Metro and I was working part-time doing home care respiratory and raising a family and going to school. And and going to school, you know, winter nights and finding a parking spot and those type of things was always a challenge. But I made it through, and I'm very proud of making it through the program and proud to say that I'm a CSU alum, and it gave me a great foundation for my future.
Well, we're very proud that you are an alum, David, and you've accomplished a great deal in your career, and we appreciate your time. Could you explain the difference between the more traditional notion of a leader versus a servant leader, and the benefits and challenges that you've found in being a servant leader?
Well, servant leadership, as defined in my book, is you have to be willing to facilitate the success of those you lead. And this leads to a greater probability for organizational success and ultimately your success. But you have to be willing to put your ego aside and work to develop those that you lead and help them feel more value towards your organization. In today's world, I call them colleagues and not employees. Colleagues are demanding more from their leaders because of a real or perceived crisis in leadership. And compassionate servant leadership is a method to lead that respects colleagues and may lead to second and sometimes third chances for them. And it's not about love and kisses, but it's really about, it demands accountability, which supports and grows a healthy bottom line for the organization. And it's essentially the right thing to do. Now, the traditional leadership, which is the hierarchical structure, which, you know, mandates orders from the top down, that still occurs. And sometimes it needs to happen that way. But generally, the more involved a servant leader gets, those colleagues that they lead more involved in decision-making and listening rather than the other traditional model.
Now, your book lays out eight core values of servant leadership that lead to greater engagement and fulfillment in jobs, careers, and your personal life. Can you share these values and talk a little bit about why they're so key to your success as a leader?
Sure, thank you. Well, there's eight values that outlined in my book, and the eight values, the book is very pragmatic in terms of real life circumstances. So the first value, and it's not in any particular order, by the way, the first value is patience, and that's being able to master the ability to publicly and privately exhibit self-control in challenging, intense situations. Sometimes when you're under pressure for that bottom line, it's hard to be patient. And that is one of the things that I had to improve on in terms of a skill. The second value is trustful, which means encouraging those you lead with support and belief. And belief is the key word here, in their talents and skills. The third one was honesty and integrity. And that's defined as being open and truthful with every individual you lead, which includes appropriate communication about the organization. And also truthful conversations with the people that you lead as well. You know, an example is don't tell them they're doing a great job without specifics, because that just it begins to fall in deaf ears. The fourth one is being grudgeless. And essentially that means as a leader, you must be willing to forgive both for somebody who committed things against the organization as well as yourself. The fifth one, of course, is servant leadership. And I talked about that a little bit a few minutes ago. Number six is walking the talk. That means living and breathing compassionate servant leadership in your daily work and your personal life. It's hard to be a compassionate servant leader if you're not a compassionate servant leader in your personal life and in your community, at your church, in your family. It's impossible to be both. Seventh is communication, incredibly important. Practice consistent and regular communication tactics that include encouragement and honest feedback. And finally, a commitment. It means staying true and dedicated to your values no matter what the circumstance. You know, we live in a very volatile and turbulent world. I think everybody would agree with that. And it becomes harder and harder to maintain that level of commitment. But that is key to being a truly, a true successful servant leader.
Of the eight, David, which one would you say is inviolate? You really have to do it or feel it or practice it. I think I have my favorite, but I'm curious to see which one you would pick.
Dean, that's a great question. I think it's walking the talk. And I did a survey in my book, and you'll see it, of these values. And walking the talk was rated by the people I interviewed. I interviewed 30 people as near the top of the list in terms of the priority. Everybody notices leaders today in our world that aren't walking the talk, whether it's in politics or industry or wherever, or corporate America. And the people you lead notice that immediately. And if you're not walking the talk every day and living those values, then you're not going to be an accomplished servant leader. You know, pretty close to that one is obviously honesty and integrity. Okay. And, you know, you have to be an honest integrity. And people can see right through that today too. And it's so I would rate those two as the top two. And a third one would be communication.
Well, I agree with you. I picked honesty and integrity, but they're all very closely aligned. So
yes,
hard to tell which one is different or even supersedes the other. Next question I have for you is, can you tell some strategies that ensure that your members of your team are feel that they're valued and heard in determining the direction of the organization?
Well, one of them would be on the trustful category. The number one sign of distrust between leader and employees is listening. And for example, you must as a servant leader master active listening. And, you know, for example, when somebody's talking in a group meeting and you're not actively listening and you're thinking things like, well, you know, my idea is greater than your idea, so I don't have to listen to you, or I am not actively listening to you because I'm already preparing my response. It's really important for a compassionate servant leader to practice active listening and speak last, okay, after everybody else in your group has had the opportunity to speak. Same with interrupting, okay? When you interrupt somebody, when a leader interrupts people that he worked with, what you are saying really is that what is not important. Another example is in the grudgeless category. A quick story I is so important, and I'm very, very, very proud of this story, proud of the employee. But about 15 years ago at the hospital I served, I had a operating room nurse who's stealing narcotics. Okay. And it's not unusual that happens, and especially in poor rural areas. And she was supposed to be terminated, and she asked to speak to me. And I had a policy at the time as a compassionate servant leader that if any employee wanted to speak to me, they could. Now, the HR people hated that, but I did it anyway. And so I sat and listened to her, and she said, I was very apologetic, asked for redemption. And generally that's a risk, but I'd rather be quick to forgive and slow to fire. So I gave her another chance because I felt like she was genuine and honest, and it was a risk. And she had to follow a bunch of steps and testing and things like that. And she had to stay clean. Well, guess what? 15 years later, she's still working and still clean. So in my mind, that was compassion. It was also be willing to forgive. And those don't always come out on the other end. I've had other examples, Dean, where we forgave people and it came back to bite us. But again, I think being a compassionate servant leader means that you have to be willing to be grudgeless and be willing to forgive. When you forgive, it has a positive ripple effect throughout the organization because it shows you care and you have empathy for those that are doing the work essentially for you.
Well, you know, David, I certainly agree with you. But, you know, in the Western canon, compassion and kindness and leadership is often not part of the lexicon. We tend to go to Machiavelli and say it's better to be feared than loved. And obviously you're saying that's not necessarily true.
Go ahead. Not at all, Dean. And in fact, if you described that very, very well about the old tradition, the traditional leadership. The problem today is the fact is, as you know very well, you know, we have the great resignation, we have the great, what do you call it, work stoppage or whatever that is. And in healthcare, unless people want more, they want to be valued. And in order to decrease turnover, okay, within your organization, whatever the organization is, you got to lead in a different way. People are looking for that. And it's as you know, we all know, yeah, you can pay them more money and that'll be good in the short term. But if you don't solve the other relationship issues, they're going to quit anyway. And so how do we treat people differently to lower this turnover in employees and or keep people in positions that are hard to fill? In healthcare, for example, you know, we're looking at, you know, it depends on the study you read, but we're looking at a $500,000 shortage, a 500,000 number of nursing shortage, as well as physicians by 2030. I mean, we've got to do it differently. We've got to figure out a way to treat people better and support their success. And this is one way, I believe, to do that.
Indeed. Could you talk about a leader who has inspired you in your career and what you learned from their leadership journey?
Sure. I'll give you two examples. Two of my mentors in my career. One of them was, his name was Doug Shaw. He was the president of Jewish Hospital in Louisville, Kentucky. I reported to him when I was running their Heart and Lung Institute, and I was the CEO of that. Doug was a pretty traditional guy, but one of the things that he was very untraditional about, you would call it today, is the fact that he believed in communicating directly with people. I'll never forget the meeting. I was in a meeting with him once and I was talking about some issue. And I said, I sent him an email and he looked at me and he said, get off the, and I won't say the expletive there, computer. He said, get off the computer, pick up your phone and call them. And he demanded that all the time. And he was right. He taught me how to communicate directly with people and as an executive. So that was one. A second one was a man named Phil Weintraub, who he served on my board of one of my hospitals, who was one of the deputy directors of the Federal Reserve Bank in the Reagan administration. And he taught me the value of being a good businessman, but having empathy and compassion for those in need, especially in healthcare. He's probably the smartest person I've ever met. Yet he's so smart, but he has a heart of gold and he cares about people. And to this day, still does a huge amount of volunteer work over in Jupiter, Florida. So those are the two that probably had the most impact. Many an impact in my life. The CEO for McLaren Healthcare, which is a 12 hospital system in Michigan. I didn't report directly to him, but I could call him and he would return my call within 24 hours. It was wonderful. And he was the easiest person to talk to. And it was called accessibility that he had and his willingness to listen in a calm way and offer advice. So I would say those are the three that really made a difference for me.
Now, this is a sort of a question that everyone asks, but I'm going to ask it anyway.
Okay.
And that is there anything you wish someone had told you along your career leadership journey that you had to learn on your own?
What did I have to learn on my own? I think in the beginning in my leadership journey, I just thought that everyone would automatically come to me. instead of me going to them. And so I created this philosophy and daily living that I needed to be accessible. I didn't think I needed to be as accessible back when I started in this journey. And I also thought that at that time that, you know, every decision I made had to be followed because it was the right decision. Well, you know, obviously that's not true because we're human beings and sometimes we make good decisions, sometimes we make bad decisions. But I just thought that, well, you know, here I'm in leadership, you'll do what I tell you to do, right or wrong. And you know, that was young, that was arrogance. So nobody really taught me that. Look, you know, if you want people to work with you and be productive and to not quit and provide great service to whoever we serve, whether it's patients or doctors or, the community, then we have to be a little bit differently. So that was probably one of the biggest one in terms of that. The other stuff, you know, like the finances and those type of things, you know, I learned those along the way as well. So sometimes, as you know, Dean, in leadership, you know, the best learning comes with real life experiences. So every day there's something new, and somebody who has an open mind should be learning every single day and never stop being a learner.
I agree, David. I wonder if you would agree with this. I found that the personal narrative goes a long way in helping you become a good leader. Have you found that to be the case when you tell people more about your own journey, your own struggles, you are able to connect and be more of a more sensitive leader?
Oh, absolutely. I was very open. I was very transparent. I did talk about the mistakes I made. And in my book, I really was very open about some of the things that I did that I would definitely do differently today. And one of the comments I've received back about the book is that people really appreciated the fact that I was very open about those things that I could have done differently. I also have some things in there that I felt like I did well and wanted to make sure that was there as a learning experience also. But I feel like if one of the things that I believe in as a compassionate servant leader is that it's important to get to know the people that you lead. Now, you know, at my last hospital, I led over 2,000 people. There was no way I was going to get to know everybody, but I knew a lot of people. And I'm not talking about learning their private life, but knowing them, getting to know them. If there's something that happened in their life, good or bad, you know, ask them about it. And those type of people love that. I had an operating room director whose 5-year-old son had lymphoma, and I heard about it and I asked her about it. I said, "How is your son doing? Is he getting?" She, the second I asked, a big smile came across her face because she was so happy to tell me that he's doing very well, his treatments are going well, and she said, "Thank you for asking about that." And now, you don't think she remembered that for, because every time I saw her, I would ask her. Those type of things are critical to being a successful leader, because it shows you're a human being and it shows you care. And if you show you care, then you're going to get the same response generally from them also. So yes, I've shared many things about myself and enjoy doing that. And I'm not talking, everything. And we used to have a lot of fun with that, especially when I was in Michigan, because I'm an Ohio State fan. So we had a lot of fun with that every year, twice a season, Michigan State and Michigan. But so that was a lot of fun. So yes, that's important.
Well, David, as always, when I talk to you, I wish I had more time. We have to bring this to a close, but one last question.
Sure.
What advice would you have for our students as they start out on their career leadership journeys?
Well, my advice to the students is this, okay? It is all about people, okay? It's all about developing relationships. You know, the numbers are the numbers, okay? And yes, you've got, you know, you're going to be, whatever job you have, you're going to be responsible for some type of financial performance, you know, but don't let the numbers and the politics sway your leadership style and philosophy. I guarantee this, Dean Englund, 100%, that if you develop strong, working, positive relationships with the people you lead as a compassionate servant leader, you know, your job will be more enjoyable and their job will be more enjoyable. And like I said, don't forget the people, making sure your people are taken care of, making sure that you get to know them, make sure you're accessible, make sure you're communicating on a timely basis. And again, these things I'm saying to you, your people say, well, that's just common sense. But I will also argue that a lot of leaders don't do that. They say they do, but they don't. And so, focus on that as a student, and get the basics of how to be a leader in terms of the business side of it. But it's really all about the people.
Outstanding. Thanks again, David. We've been listening to and talking to David Zechman. David, what's the name of your book again?
Oh, here it is. It's called Driven by Compassion, 8 Values for Successful Servant Leaders. You can get it you can buy it through Amplify Publishing, Amazon, or Barnes & Noble. And it comes in audio too. So thank you for allowing me to put that plug in, Dean.
Not at all. It's a great book. I had fun reading it.
Well, go ahead.
Go ahead, David.
I just really enjoy you, and I enjoy your outlook on life and leadership, Dean. And I hope that you and I stay in touch, just maybe connect periodically by phone. But I please keep up the good work with the students and what you're doing. I'm proud of Cleveland State. I'm proud of what Cleveland State's doing for the city of Cleveland. I think Cleveland State can be the driver, yes, healthcare is the big driver of the economy there, but I think Cleveland State can be the academic driver, and I think can really help turn around the city and the community. So please keep up the good work. I'm proud of it.
Thank you, David. That's it for today. We'll join us next time for a masterclass series on leadership and other things in public affairs.